Hey, kids, you're listening to A Couple of Annoyed Grumpoys, and this is the 138th Simpsons Podcast. That's right, where the Simpsons Podcast discusses the beloved animated sitcom The Simpsons from seasons 11 and beyond, and the new episodes when they air. Why do we do it this way? Well, you see, there's plenty of podcasts out there that have discussed that golden age, that being seasons 1 through 10, and we were tasked by an entity known as the Wheel of Random, to watch episodes from the latter seasons to see if they can match those Golden Age episodes. And when I say we, I'm just one annoyed grump boy named Craig. With me, as always, is the other annoyed grump boy,
Steve. Hello, Craig.
Hey, Steve. You know, a lot of times on this podcast, we don't know what to talk about. You know, nothing crazy happens in our lives. Mm-hmm. Well, finally, something crazy happened to me.
What?
I had to bring this up. Yeah. I kept this off pod too. I didn't tell you what happened because I want your legit reaction to see like what you would do in the situation as a human being. You know, we think we're all high and mighty and like good people, but when it happens to you, what do you do? What do you do? So we're out this last weekend and a friend of ours having a birthday party. So it's at an event. After the party ends, we go back to their house. So we get back to the house and we're just enjoying some cocktails, some wine. And all of a sudden, we see someone pounding on the window. It's this girl who is like panicking. And we're like, do we know this person? And all we hear, she's like, please let me in. Please let me in. Someone's following me. They have a gun. Please, I need help. Let me in. We're all like, we don't know you. This is not safe. So like, I've heard stories of home invasions start. Like a girl panicking. Someone lets them in and there's someone behind her with a gun, like comes in and, you know, robs the place or what. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say what we do in this situation because I want to know what your take on this would be.
It's tough because you want to be a good person and you want to help people, but also you don't want to get screwed over. I don't even know. Because I don't want to let them in.
Right.
I'm not comfortable with people in my house.
Yeah. Even when like your family members come over, like, hey, let us in. Like, I don't know.
man, that's tough because I would ask him if there are like any safe place I can go or if like there's a number I could call if I could get in contact with somebody else who can help them. Probably what I'd do and maybe offer to call the police.
Yeah. So that's kind of what we did. It was like, you know, the owner of the house was like in a calm manner, just like, listen, we're calling the police now to help you. Like, it wasn't like we're going to the police, you know, to, you know, it was like,
right,
in a common, like, for safety reasons, we can't let you in, sorry. But this girl was very frantic, and also like it seemed off because it looked like she was acting, you know, like a bad acting job. Uh-huh. Yeah, can't. Anyway, so yeah, it was she ended up just like staying in the backyard of the house until the cops arrived. And you know, the owner of the house is like, you're free to come in and go through the back, or you go through around the back. And the cops, yeah, she was like huddled up down by like some bushes or whatever. And apparently it was just, we don't know the whole story, but one of the police officers told us that was, there had been like a hit and run and the person in the other car, like that caused the accident, like fled the scene. And so like, right, you know, that was only a couple blocks from where this happened. So it was like, well, it was most likely, it was probably her. And maybe like had a concussion or something, or was either on, she looked like she was on something.
Right.
But it was also really creepy too, because like she would duck down from the window and then duck back up through like the door window and stuff like that. It was kind of creepy.
Oh, yeah, that's weird.
And just like looked like on something, or I don't know. But everyone was safe. Like even when the police were escorting her away from the premises, like she wasn't in cuffs or anything. She was just like walking with them, like, you know, nothing escalated. But boy, like after that, where I was like, oh, I could use a drink now, even though like we were drinking. After that story, Steve, I don't know, could you use a drink?
Oh, yeah. I could definitely use a drink, which brings us to our favorite segment, the Simpsons Beer Corner.
Now a little beer music to get in the mood.
All right, Steve, what do you got for us this week?
In this episode, we've got Artie Ziff, who Marge calls a little nerd. And, you know, he's forced to do some dancing. So from Prairie Artisan Ales, because art is anal, and right. anal is art, we have Nerdy Dancing. It's a sour ale with crunchy sour candy, FD&C Blue Number 1, FD&C Blue Number 2, FD&C Red Number 40, FD&C Yellow Number 6, FD&C Yellow Number 5, and Carmine Color. Now, the can is quite kid-friendly, and it shows a nerdy dude in a bowling shirt and a nerdy girl in a dress doing some DDR dancing, Dance Dance Revolution. There's also a couple other nerds. One guy is holding up another nerdy girl a la Flashdance, and then there's a nerdy guy dancing with a robot. Very kid-friendly. And so the premise of this beer is that it is going to have nerds candy in it, but to avoid any sort of legal complications from the very litigious Willy Wonka, called Nerdy Dancing, comes in at 4.8%, and it is the color of dirty swamp water. It is not a pleasant-looking drink, kind of like pickle brine, maybe?
Yum, yum.
It smells like candy, and I'm going to take it.
Looks like shit.
Pretty much, yeah.
Next thing to sip in, and he is, like, puckering up his face, like,
yeah.
He had the worst, like, Warhead sour candy of all time, but also looks a little delighted.
Yeah, it's interesting. It is very, very sweet and also a little sour, but I have to say, much like George W. Bush, mission accomplished, because it does taste like nerds. Like, if nerds were beer, this would be what it tastes like. So,
wow.
I don't know that I want more than one, or if I even need a whole one. I'm glad it's a 12-ounce can rather than a 16-ounce can. I do think that they did what they're going for very well. So I would call it a success. Yeah, what have you got for us, Craig?
Well, Marge is feeling a little tired because you can't sleep because Homer's snoring, and breakfast is very much ruined in the beginning of this episode. But later on, when she gets a nice good rest, she makes a wonderful breakfast. You know, you got some waffles and pancakes and some purple oatmeal for Maggie for some reason. Well, you know, I'll make oatmeal and it's with blueberries and it's purple. So I thought, a nice, like, sweet breakfast. What's one of the best treats you can have, which it's totally fine to eat during the first thing you wake up in the morning? And that's a cinnamon roll. Perfectly fine. Yeah. So that's why I thought, hey, how about Boulevard Brewing's Sticky Bun Alert Cinnamon Bun Ale?
Ooh.
But it's a little boozy, guys. It's a 9.5%, and this can is one of the most kid-friendly cans I've ever seen. It's got a pink background, but then there's like a cinnamon roll head guy talking on the phone. Even has like the can, like the Pillsbury can graphic of, you know, when you pop open the can, like it says pop, open, you know, like when you buy like the,
Yeah.
It says, I'm a sinner and a saint, like S or C-I-N-N-E-R. There's a lot going on in this can. Like, I could just sit on the couch drinking this, looking at it, be like, this is good. Rolling in the dough. There's a, what a fun can, Steve. Boulevard Brewing out of Kansas City, Missouri. I mean, do I have to say anything about cinnamon bun ale? I've been looking forward to this one. And we're in that holiday season where, you know, you can drink more and eat crappy food, and it's fine because, you know, come January 1st, you're getting on that Peloton and
oh, yeah,
working off those calories. So don't forget, peloton.com/138simpsons for 10% off your first order of exercise.
Your wife will love it.
So when I'm smelling it here, I get a lot of kind of like a banana bready smell, but it's kind of the same spices that you would put in a banana bread, like cinnamon, you know?
Right.
This does not smell like beer at all. This smells like... All right, well, I got to go in for the taste, right? It smells wonderful, by the way.
So he's going for a sip. Now, I've had a few beers from Boulevard, but I've not had this one, and they've never done me wrong, so I'm excited to see what you think of it.
Wow. This is...
Oh.
I've had a lot of gimmicky beers on this podcast that, you know, just taste like beer with a hint of something. This is the best dessert beer I think it's ever been invented. And I've probably said that about other dessert beers on this podcast, but I will say I'm a big cinnamon head. I think cinnamon is like the best spice for sweetness.
For sure. I would
also
agree.
For savory. You can use it. It is smooth. There's no like initial, like with your drink earlier, you had like the little, the face, you'd made the face. There's no face to be made. Yeah. Like you don't know you're drinking alcohol. This is, to quote the great Kids in the Hall, this is girl drink drunk.
Sounds awful. Oh,
this is, as Marge would say in this episode later, like, hold on, Delilah. This is, like you get the cinnamon, like, you know, the, when you go to Cinnabon and you get the, and you like bite into the cinnamon sugar cream mixture, you know, the buttery cinnamon sugar, that's what this is. This drink is the, the dark, because this is a dark brown. Yeah. This is the cinnamon and sugar mix buttery flavor.
Oh.
And if you guys can find this, man, get this. This is a treat. I know this would probably just be a one-off, like one and done, but as much as like you'd like, remember that Seinfeld bit where his like cinnamon bottom's like he just wants to put his head face down on a cinnamon roll, like, and live there. Like, that's, I want to live in this moment.
Oh.
Of that flavor. Like, I'm going to be sad when this beer is gone. Like, I'm going to want more. And so if you love cinnamon, this is, I think I have some frozen Cinnabon in the freezer. I might have to just like dip it in there. Like, oh, it's amazing. 100%. I love this one. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Kudos to Boulevard. I know we've done quite a few of their beers on this podcast, but wow.
They're good. Wowie wow. They do what they do well.
Steve, I'm going to have to forget about this beer because we can continue on this podcast. 4 hours of me just talking about how much I love this beer. So let's go back into the Wayback Machine and go all the way back to the year 2002, specifically February 10th. Steve, what was the number one movie in the box office?
Well, all those lovers were getting ready for Valentine's Day with the Arnold Schwarzenegger classic Collateral Damage.
You know, I think that's one of the few Arnie movies I haven't seen.
Yeah, this era of Arnie, I don't really remember too fondly.
Yeah, like, I think we were kind of burned out by T3. You're like, oh, right, Terminator 3, because nothing can live up to Terminator 2. And it's been proven since then, like, you can never make a movie better than Terminator 2. And it's just like, just quit. Don't make Terminator movies anymore. There's no point. You've made the best one.
No.
Let's move on.
Just stop.
It's like Star Wars. Like, look, you made The Phantom Menace. It's the best Star Wars movie. You don't need to continue.
Yeah.
Jar Jar Binks, best
character. Exactly.
Yeah, and this is like probably one of his last movies before he became governor, like around that same time. 2002, yeah. When was he governor?
Maybe it was around 2000. I think it was later, like 2006 maybe.
Yeah, because he was governor during the Bush era.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he wasn't governor when Obama was president, right?
I don't think so.
Okay, well, when we do our Arnold Schwarzenegger podcast, we'll have to cover it eventually.
Of course. But while we were not watching that, what were we listening to on our iPods?
Well, I think 2002, we don't have iPods yet. Steve, we are still using CD players. I think we've had the song before. Yeah, no, 2002? Of course not. No, there's no iPods.
Okay.
We were listening to Usher, You Got It Bad. You got it bad. Yeah, we've had this song on the podcast before.
This was a big time for Usher.
He's going to be performing the Super Bowl this coming year, 2024. Don't make the joke, Steve. Don't make the Usher joke.
Okay, fine.
All right.
I really want to.
I just hope that the Kansas City Chiefs will be in the Super Bowl and like Usher's performing, but all they're going to do is like have the camera on Taylor Swift, who's not singing. I mean, if the Chiefs get and her and Travis Kelce are still like together, you know, who knows if they'll still be together. You know, it's only a couple months away, but still, if they go to the Super Bowl, like, that's going to be kind of awkward. Like, the most popular musician of all time is at the Super Bowl, but she's just there to support her man.
Right.
Well, Usher, there's
nobody's
probably
gonna be watching the game.
They'll be watching her. And I feel bad for Usher, honestly. It's like, oh, fuck. Like, he needs to, like, say, I got COVID that week. I can't perform.
Or he needs to write a duet with
Taylor
Swift now.
But then, like, she shouldn't perform. If the Chiefs were in the Super Bowl, she shouldn't perform because it's, like, favoritism.
That's also true.
Hmm.
Or imagine that they break up and the Chiefs go to the Super Bowl and then everybody hates Travis Kelce.
Oh, that's going to happen. You have to be there for the end game. You cannot, which is a song of hers, you can't just date Taylor Swift because no matter who breaks up with who, you're going to be public enemy number one.
Yeah, no matter who wins, you lose.
Yeah, this is the true Alien versus Predator. Who's who, though?
Hmm.
Well, let's not discuss that part, Steve. We should just discuss The Simpsons instead. And that, hey, it's about love, you know. Travis Kelce, Taylor Swift. They're the you know, back in the 70s, Marge Simpson was Taylor Swift and Artie Ziff was Travis Kelce.
Oh.
Right? And that makes Homer, us. Because we all want to be with Marge Simpson.
That's right.
See, the episode is called Half Decent Proposal, Season 13, Episode 10, when Homer's snoring becomes too much to bear. A drunken Marge makes contact with her incredibly rich high school prom date, Artie Ziff. Artie makes Homer and Marge an indecent proposal, which they can't afford to turn down. All right, Steve, let's take a break. I'm hesitant to let you sip my beer, not because of cooties, because I want all the sips. I don't want to share this.
You want some of my beer?
Nope.
Ah.
But okay, hey, Steve, fine. I'm going to pound this down. I'm going to save us all year long. But we're going to take a little break and come back and discuss the episode. So stick around, folks. We'll be right back. And we're back. Today we are talking about Half Decent Proposal. It's the 10th episode of the 13th season. Originally aired February 10th, 2002. It's episode 279 of the show's run. Your nerd code is DABF04, written by Tim Long, directed by Lauren McMullen, and the showrunner is Al Jean.
Oh boy, Tim Long, we've talked about him for a long time. There's that joke. He's from Brandon, Manitoba, Canada. Now he lives in Exeter, Ontario. He's written for The Simpsons, Politically Incorrect with Bill Maher, Spy Magazine, and The Late Show with David Letterman. He was an executive producer of The Simpsons until season 20. He's written 33 episodes, which puts him in the running as one of the more tenured writers of The Simpsons. And we have reviewed 18 episodes so far. This is the 19th. Some that we haven't reviewed, one that we can't, is Simpsons Bible Story, because that is from season 10. Behind the Laughter, which we can review, but we have not yet. Break My Wife, Please, Homer and Lisa Exchange Crosswords, which is one that I'm looking forward to. The Devil Wears Nada, Elementary School Musical, Money Bart. Just to name a few.
I didn't realize he was from Brandon, Manitoba. I plan on taking a road trip up to go through Canada, so I don't know. What do you think? Let's go, Brandon?
After we Pokemon go to the polls, we can let's go, Brandon, Canada.
I mean, his former boss, Politically Incorrect with Bill Maher, would probably be up for let's go, Brandon, right?
Yeah, after he's done masturbating into a silk napkin.
Wait, what? I actually don't know this.
Somebody who used to be an intern for him, also an intern for The Simpsons, who now hosts a popular food podcast, tells a story about how before every episode of The Bill Maher Show, he would jerk off into a silk napkin. It had to be silk. And then he would go on air.
We're not like that at all. We use just 100% cotton before we record an episode.
Yep.
We're not hoity-toity like a Bill Maher.
No. But I do play Aaron Neville's cotton theme as I do it.
Well, Tim Long, we like a lot of his work, right?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of like...
What's the most recent one? It was the season finale from last year, right? Homer's Adventure Through the Windshield Glass?
Yeah, it was a really fun episode. Very creative.
That was a great episode. And of course, anytime he gets to write in Canada,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, like Doe Canada, all those good ones here, Steve. I noticed that there's a chalkboard gag. It's nice to go back to... Season 13, where we can see good old Barty Boy writing on the chalkboard.
Yep, we're in classic Simpsons mode. He writes, "I will not bite the hand that feeds me Butterfingers."
Great reference to Simpsons used to do Butterfinger commercials.
Yes, but also, two episodes earlier, there was an episode called Sweet and Sour Marge, in which Springfield bans all sugar. The police force burns a bunch of confiscated candy, but they put some Butterfingers in the fire, and it spits them out unharmed. So Chief Wiggum goes, even the fire doesn't want them, referencing Butterfingers. So that's what this whole thing is about.
Was Team Butterfinger offended?
I think they were pretty hurt.
By that joke?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a funny joke. I'm sure there's people that don't like a Butterfinger, but for me, Butterfinger is a top-tier candy bar.
Yes, I agree. I will say that in the past 5 years or so, they have changed the recipe, so it's not quite as crispity, crunchy, and delicious, but it's still very good.
So you're saying, like, I could probably lay my hand on your Butterfinger, and you'd be like, nah, that's fine.
Yeah, you could lay a finger, but not two fingers.
Always make sure to ask for consent if you're going to put your finger on someone's Butterfinger.
Yes, consent is key. Do we have a couch gag, Craig?
It's the family called the Simpsons, and they're arriving in a living room to find two repo men taking away the family's beloved sofa.
Oh.
Homer weeps while the kids sit on the floor, you know, indifferent.
Nice. So this is the first time that this couch gag was used. However, we on the podcast have seen it before because it was used again in the season 22 episode, The Sweetest Apu, which we talked about back in June of this year.
June, when the weather was warm and the sky was blue and Norman Lear was still alive.
Yes. Some would say a better time, especially Norman Lear.
Left us too young, Steve.
I know.
Norman Lear didn't live in our world. We lived in his.
Well put. He was very important to TV.
But like, well, yeah. But I was just thinking like the way he died, like that's like, isn't that the ideal way you want to die? Just be surrounded by loved ones,
mm-hmm.
singing you TV show theme songs.
That's how I assume I'm going to go.
They're singing the Jefferson, like moving on up to a big apartment in the sky. Like, oh.
Yep.
He's probably like hitting on Jimmy Carter's wife now.
And then he's going to go play guitar with Jimi Hendrix.
I just want a painting. Now with like the AI technology of making paintings, like I just want to see Norman Lear and Jimi Hendrix wailing on the guitar. Maybe Kurt Cobain's there.
Mm-hmm.
Jimi Hendrix is singing. I mean, Jim Morrison is singing.
Yeah, Beethoven's on piano.
Steve, let's just begin the episode. And it begins, as every Simpsons episode does, on a sleepy night in Springfield. A comic book guy is dozing off into slumber with his Chewbacca pajamas surrounded by all this Star Wars memorabilia. And he clutches his lovely Jar Jar Binks doll, sleepily saying that everyone hates Jar Jar but him. So he kisses the old Gungan toy and the camera pans, passes young and old autographed photos of Mark Hamill. It looks like one from Star Wars and one from Return of the Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going through Evergreen Terrace, where we hear Homer's cacophonous snore shaking the house and it's keeping Marge awake. So as Homer loudly snores, Marge tosses and turns, puts a pillow over her head, and even ties her hair around her like earplugs and attempt to drown that noise. Then she decides to plug Homer's nose, but that just causes him to snore out of his mouth. And then she covers his mouth, which then Homer snores from his eyelids. And it's very disturbing animation, but very funny.
Yeah.
Also, like, it looks like she's just straight up trying to murder her husband.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Steve, is this relatable in your household?
Very much so, to the point where I didn't want to show this episode to my wife because I didn't want her to kill me. Because,
It's bad, like, especially if I drinking.
Oh, yeah.
It's awful. But if I don't drink that night, it's not that bad. It's still bad, but not that bad. But I use the nose strips.
Mm-hmm.
I probably have sleep apnea. I probably need that sleep apnea in a machine.
I am exactly in the same boat. I use the strips. I should go and get the machine or some surgery or something. But, yeah.
Hey, folks, give us each $1 million, mm-hmm. like Homer needs for the surgery coming up. And
yeah,
you'll thank us later.
We won't let you have a weekend with our spouses, but you can have a weekend with us.
Steve, do you know Simpsons fans?
No, yeah.
If I was in a room with Simpsons fans and Hitler and had one bullet, wait, what's that from The Office? So like, if
oh yeah,
Toby and Hitler. I forget, but it's like Hitler still somehow survives.
Yeah.
Hey, we're not here to talk about Office. That's the Office lady's job. They don't sit around talking about the Samsons.
No, and
yet
they will. Probably once they get around to season 7, they're like, yeah, we don't want to talk about this.
Let's just talk about it. No, it's after Michael leaves.
Yeah.
Season 7 is when Steve Carell leaves, and then it's all downhill from there.
You don't love the plotline of Robert California?
Honestly, even a bad episode of The Office is still enjoyable to me. I'll be a big man and admit that.
Yeah, it's true. They're all fun.
Yeah.
Back to another great show, The Simpsons. The following morning, a sleep-deprived Marge tries to make breakfast for the family. She pours milk into a potted plant, assuming it's a bowl of cereal, serves it to Bart with a spoon. Lisa goes in for a forkful of waffles, but instead finds a syrup-drenched issue of Time magazine with the headline AOL Rules, referencing the mega merger that between the two companies that happened in the previous year. Bart assumes that his mother's on drugs and thinks that he can get a form letter from then-Vice President Dick Cheney if he turns her in. But while Marge tries to put a plate in the toaster, Lisa explains that Marge's lack of sleep is due to Homer's chronic snoring.
I don't remember the reference that Bart's making about Dick Cheney and if you ratted out drug users, you...
I do believe that that was a thing, yeah. It was him being tough on crime by offering offering children, if they squealed on their parents.
You'll get the cool letter and you get to go hunting with me.
It'll be a blast to your face.
I remember like they were the most insane like Republicans at the time, and then now even like those retired Republicans, like a Cheney and a Bush, W. Bush, are like, oh yeah, the Republican Party's not the shit show that it was when, you know, like it's more of a shit show than we made it to be.
Oh yeah.
At least there's some sort of decorum, and sometimes people got along in American politics, but here we are, Steve.
Yeah, they were awful, but man, who knew what awful could be?
Are we going to be allowed to do a podcast anymore in like when America becomes a dictatorship in like a year?
Probably not. I think Herr Trump will probably just ban all media.
Except for his own. He'll just be like Kim Jong-un, who just controls the media in North Korea.
I mean, we're,
that sucks.
We're not a political podcast, but yeah, he calls him pretty smart. He calls Kim Jong-un pretty smart. So he must be doing something right.
Who, Kim? Yeah.
Yeah. Good old Kim.
He really is. But, like, we'll probably just be hanging out at, like, a camp that we're sent to, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
We could just do a podcast there that's, like, ham radio. I don't know.
I mean, maybe we'll get college credit. It's one of those intern camps.
Jesus. I think then, once we're in those camps, dude, I think then we'll, like, get rid of the idea of, like, doing the 11 and beyond that we do in this podcast. And we'll actually talk about the good times, seasons 1 through 10, just so we can cheer people up.
Yeah.
We might have to, like, reenact them, too, because we won't have, like, access to those episodes.
Right.
So Simpsons fans, let's all get together, and then we'll just perform plays of each episode of The Simpsons.
Sounds like fun.
From memory.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they could do it.
I think I could probably do that.
I think the... Like, all the nerdy TV shows, like, after, like, let's say we all lost power and, you know, we lost everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Technology-wise, film. I guess film can still. But anyways, but, you know, we could act it all out. Let's look into it, Steve.
Alrighty. Yeah, we'll do that.
That's going to be our, we have to have, like, a skill in the, you know, communities that we live in. And ours will be retelling. We'll just be like, yeah, like, back in the olden days before written word, you know, there was the, you know, what were they called? Like a storyteller, just who, you know, each generation just tells people the stories of the past. And our community would say, oh, yeah, back then, this town used to be called Springfield. Yeah, yeah, that's the ticket.
Yeah. Hey.
Hey.
That's a fun guy.
Hey. That's John Lovitz's character from SNL. Hey, let's go back to Simpsons.
Okay.
Marge tells the kids that she's taking Homer to Dr. Hibbert in the afternoon. And since it's so hard to get a doctor on a Wednesday morning. And if you notice in the background, Bart takes a flower from the pot and starts eating it. Which I wonder if that's a callback to Homer's secret shame is he eats flowers. What episode is that from? Is that the Burns' heir, right?
Yeah.
Go eat some flowers. That's very funny. Anyway, so when she's saying that doctors are hard to get on Wednesday morning, and it's that typical, you know, all doctors are playing golf because you see Hibbert in the golf attire. But then it just like zooms right out and it's Dr. Nick is driving and they're just speeding through a neighborhood and hitting... mailboxes, like what kids did in rural parts of town. Oh, it was just so funny. Like, I don't know what that, just the idea of like hitting, I don't know, very funny, just such a good visual gag.
Yeah, and so silly.
At Springfield General Hospital, Marge is explaining her woes and saying she hasn't lost so much sleep since little Barty had the scoots. Again, just another fun turn of phrase, the scoots. So the good doctor, not that one, says there is a surgical procedure that will cure Homer's story, but it's quite expensive. He then writes a figure on a card and passes it to Homer, and Homer responds by writing down and sends the paper back over, and then Homer looks at it and says, do it for free. And Homer's just like, get out. Is that, that's kind of an ongoing Simpsons gag too, is passing the, or not even Simpsons, like that's a thing TV shows, movies do. Have you ever been anywhere where someone like, I mean, do they do that when you like buy a car? Like, well, here's the best I can do is slide you the money or slide you the paper so you can look at it.
I've never been in that experience because like, I think people just say numbers. Like it's a,
I mean, I've been, yeah, to car dealerships and they'll write numbers down and like circle things because it looks like they're, they know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to start doing that at work. Your beer will be this much.
Or like someone asked for like a mixed drink. You're like, all right, well, so I'm going to put 4 ounces of this, 2 ounces of this, write down like, and this is going to be the total. So are these amounts adding up to you? Like the 4 ounces, 3 ounces, 2.5 ounces?
They counter offer with like just a really boozy drink.
Yeah, like, how about just vodka? All right.
You're going to make that happen.
That same price.
So that evening, as Homer does the classic me snore, Marge looks for rest and relief by sleeping outside on the doorstep. And then the newspaper delivery person comes by and tosses the early edition of the Springfield Shopper, and it hits Marge in the head, so she reads the headline, "Sleep Important, Say Experts," followed by another front-page story, "Slow News Day Grips Springfield." These are just so jokey jokes, and I love it.
Yeah.
As the morning goes on, Marge drives Bart, Lisa, and Milhouse to school. But she nods off while behind the wheel, and she hits the horn with her head. She assumes that the horn is a phone call, so she goes to answer it by jumping out of the moving car. And so as she's rolling down a hill, she finally gets some sleep that she so desperately needs.
This is like when you're watching a baseball game and there's like a streak going on, like there's the batter's up, hits a great hit, gets on base, another on base, you know, there's no outs, no strikes. This opening of this episode is just like, it's getting all on base, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just such a good intro.
Yeah.
It's very funny, everything that's happening so far.
I think it's an apt simile, and I do agree with that. It is like baseball.
Anyway, so meanwhile, Bart grabs the steering wheel and urges Lisa and Milhouse to control the pedals. Lisa takes the gas, while Milhouse takes the brake. And Milhouse asks if Lisa has a date to the harvest dance. And Lisa says, it's not a good time. And to which Milhouse angrily responds, that is never a good time.
Mm.
Anyway, so later, sleep-deprived Marge arrives at the Spinster City Apartments, much to the delight of her sisters.
Overnight bag? No husband in sight. It's happened. She left Homer? I'll get the champagne and let's get that ring off.
Whoa, 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 Delilah. I didn't leave Homer, and I never will. I just need one night away from his snoring.
Great. We'll have a girl's night. No bras. Na-dam. Let's catch the tail end of Nookie in New York.
Nookie in New York?
It's a cable show about four single women who act like gay men.
That sounds great.
If I'm not having sex by the end of this goat cheese quesadilla, I'm gonna scream.
I also enjoy sex.
Since this morning, I've had sex with a New York Nick, two subway cops, and a guy who works on Wall Street.
Broker?
Nah, she's just really sore.
This is so like our lives.
I know it's supposed to be dumb, but Broker...
It's the joke that the Sex and the City writers wish they wrote.
And it's the only time I would have laughed. Now, I've never seen an episode of Sex and the City.
I have never voluntarily watched an episode. I think I've probably seen every episode just by proxy of dating women. And there are a few shows that I hate more. I think the writing is super forced. It's so like proud of itself for the jokes that it pretends to make. And also I find it to be incredibly sexist. Like it's simple-minded, and I don't... It's one of my least favorite shows. It's, like, to me, Chuck Lorre level bad.
Wow. What about Arliss?
Who doesn't love the antics of Robert Wool as a sports agent?
I think it's
I don't know
like
what that show's about. Yeah.
I you know, I think the early 2000s of HBO was revolutionary to you know, modern television, you know, with Sopranos and Sex and the City. And I mean, Curb Your Enthusiasm started like in 2000, 2001.
Yeah.
It's crazy to think that. And then finally, like, season 12 comes out later in 2024.
Right. Yeah, I think I mostly watched HBO then for nudity.
So that's why you watched Artless a lot? Oh, let's not forget Entourage. Again, I never watched that show either. I just don't like Jeremy Piven. And that's why I never really watched. Awful. Although, I think my first exposure to Jeremy Piven was Ellen. The Ellen DeGeneres, the sitcom Ellen had, right? Because he was like his cousin or something like that on the show.
Yeah, These Friends of Mine, it was.
Right. I remember enjoying that first show, that Ellen show. I used to watch that.
Yeah.
Was that like on, like, I feel like Ellen and Drew Carey were kind of like on, like, were they on back to back maybe? Or like a Wednesday night? Yeah, I don't know when.
That sounds, I think everything you're saying makes perfect. Yeah, the tracks. And it was like during the height of Friends, but they made jokes about them not being friends.
Right. There's a, like, Cozy TV, or there's one of those like over-the-air channels, like Cozy TV. It's not MeTV. It's Cozy Laughed. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but they actually show like reruns of Drew Carey, and I've been like watching them. Because like you can't find Drew Carey streaming anywhere because of like rights issues, but they can still have like syndicated like over-the-air. And like, this show like does kind of hold up. Like, I know there might be like some... jokes like, you know, like maybe like gay panic type of jokes, or like, you know, disparaging females via, you know, Mimi, but also, you know, I think it always kind of worked. I think Mimi and Drew always worked because they had the same joke at their expense.
Yeah.
So it worked. But like, again, I think that show like really, it's still funny. I think, I don't know. It's delightful.
It was a great episode. It was a great show that was like really experimental for its time. And just had a lot of fun.
And don't forget, like, two great opening theme songs. You had the 5 o'clock World, and then you had Cleveland Rocks. Like, those intros were awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Shows don't do that anymore. Like, the last one that was really cool was when James Gunn did the Peacemaker show for HBO, and they had that was the best part of the show, was doing the intro song. Even if you never watched the show, just watch the intro because it's so cool. Yeah. Stupid advertisers. They got rid of the themes for TV shows. That's why Simpsons, we don't have couch gags anymore. We don't have, well, we still have the couch gag, but we don't have the Bart chalkboard gags anymore.
Right. And sometimes we get nothing. Like, it's just a straight open.
Yeah. It's sad. All just to sell, I don't know, whatever the ads they sell.
All prescription drugs or insurance. That's the only things that are commercials are for anymore.
Well, Steve, we'll go back to the Simpsons. Patty's there. They're watching the Sex and the City show. And she's munching on some chips wearing a sexy on shirt. And at first, the A was covering her arms, every the A. And I thought, like, did Simpsons do a sexy C word shirt? But no, of course, that's not what it says. But now I know what shirt we have to put on our store.
I was going to say, yeah.
We probably would make some money off of that shirt. Can you?
Yeah.
I mean, it's freedom of speech. And if someone wants to wear it, why not?
Yeah. And I think if you say it, like, with Willie's voice, it's okay. Like, ooh, sexy c***.
We don't say that word on the show, Steve. I have to bleep you there.
I can't say sexy?
No. It makes our female listeners a little uncomfortable.
They don't want to associate me with sex.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't think of Steve when you're having the best sex of your life, guys. Anyway, so the TV announcer says that the next on BHO is Arliss, which causes the twins to scramble and then... for the remote. Arliss was such a great punchline back then, right?
Oh, yeah.
We already made fun of Arliss. Anyway, see, they flip over to Channel 6, and where Kent Brockman reports that Men's Wealth Magazine has listed the 100 richest men in the country. And coming in at number 5 is Springfield's native Artie Ziff. Patty recognizes him as Marge's ex, but she points out that they only went out once. And in this clip, Kent tells the source of Artie's fortune.
Artie made megabucks with a revolutionary invention, a converter that changes that horrible modem noise into easy listening music.
Also available with lyrics.
Hey, computer geek, you'll be connected in no time.
What a catch. Why didn't you sink your claws into him at the prom? Yeah, he was warm for your form.
Well, he seemed like a sweet little shrimp. But then he turned into an octopus.
Marty, how do you know?
Marge,
stop.
Marge, you know you can't resist my busy hands.
Marty, get off of me! Well, I think you should get in touch with him. You know, just to congratulate him on his success. Well, I suppose I could write him a letter. Are you nuts? Email female.
Is this the first appearance of Artie back on the show since
the way we was?
Yeah.
Technically, yes. It is the first return of John Lovitz as Artie Ziff. However, in episode 4, The Front, which is the one where Bart and Lisa write the Itchy and Scratchy episode, the B plot is they go to their high school reunion and Artie Ziff appears in that. However, John Lovitz was unavailable to record a voice, so they had Dan do the voice instead.
Oh, that's right.
But since this episode, he's also appeared like 8 more times, either in flashback or as Eiffel Artie Ziff.
Right. And occasionally Lovitz comes back and does the theater director guy voice. I forget his name.
Llewellyn?
Yeah. Yeah, because John Lovitz is back every, it seems like maybe once every couple years he comes back to do a voice.
Because mm-hmm.
he's got a couple characters. It's interesting because it's like you had Phil Hartman, and Phil and John were like best friends.
Mm-hmm.
They grew up doing the Groundlings together and stuff like that. And I think even John was mentioned to get Phil on SNL
mm-hmm.
and kind of helped, Phil get on SNL. But yeah, it was, because John was pretty early on coming into out of The Simpsons, with Artie Ziff, but
other, right,
but also the Streetcar Named Marge episode, playing both mm-hmm. the director and his sister, writing the Ayn Rand daycare.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Nyasnin,
that's far worse.
Yeah.
Because she's an erotic diarist. So that's a much worse. That's dumb, Steve.
I was thinking like another fun John Lovitz thing was from the 40th SNL In Memoriam segment of SNL. They put John Lovitz's up and they cut to him just like sitting in the audience like, what? I'm not dead.
Yeah.
We saw...
He's classic.
We've probably talked about... we saw him do stand-up live a few years ago. Yeah.
It was a good show.
Yeah. Anyways, welcome to the show, John Lovitz. He would probably say that we stink. Don't forget, critic, guys.
Oh, yeah.
It's weird. We've got Futurama's coming back. Came back. King of the Hill's coming back. Like, can we revitalize the critic? Like, especially now. Like, what would Jay Sherman be doing?
Oh, yeah.
In this world, so same age and everything. I don't think they would age. It's a cartoon. So, would he be like a podcast? Like, there's no TV critics anymore. Like, you only really had Siskel and Ebert and Leonard Maltin and Gene Shalit doing movie reviews on TV. But now, I don't think it's all podcast. YouTube?
Yeah.
Would he be on TikTok?
I could see him begrudgingly be on TikTok, yeah.
Yeah.
So, Marge has another drink, and so Patty and Selma offer to dictate her email to Artie. So Marge giggles, saying, hold on to your hats. And then she writes, dear Artie, congratulations on your recent TV appearance. Which is such a Marge thing to say. Patty and Selma hear that, and instead type, dear Hottie, I want to sex you up. Your love slave, Marge. And of course, Marge is shocked, commenting that you can't use the word sex on the internet. But Patty defiantly says, watch me, and then hits the send button, or, return, on the keyboard.
But her keyboard only has one thing on it, it's send.
Right, exactly. She got one of those email computers.
So when we watched the email go through the internet, and it goes through these wires into like a beat up piece of machinery marked Cisco systems, which I guess was a dig at Cisco. That was like an earlier internet provider for people. If people don't understand that, like whatever your provider is now. I mean, there was only you had AOL, you had like Prodigy. Remember Prodigy?
Mm-hmm.
Like we used like a local one, literally a local business that like had internet, like dial-up internet.
Yeah, me too. I remember my dad wanted to give me a cool coffee-related username, so he was going to do Mocha Man, but that was taken, so I was Noka Man with an N, which means nothing. But he tried.
He tried. Yeah. Well, as they land through Artie Ziff's little computer there, and along with other silver emails warning about antitrust lawsuits,
So that scene, as well as the flashback of prom night, was really difficult for them to animate because it uses a lot of like different things. And so they had to like take it apart and piece it together. The director, Lauren McMullen, did it herself. And so evidently this episode was quite the production, and the animators were upset by it. So, but I think it makes for a fun visual thing. Like, I love the idea of email now is just there, but at the time it's still kind of novel.
Do you think someone was like correcting on the keyboard too? Like, why is it there are actual letters on the keyboard, and why does it say send as return? And like, listen, we are so doing so much.
We ain't got time for that.
Yeah, like, okay, sorry.
So Artie reads his email in his high-rise silicone office, saying that it's quite a coincidence that Marge would drop him a line since he was just thinking about her for the past 20 years. And so the camera zooms out, and we see all this artwork of different styles. We got, like, a Warhol-type thing, the sculptures and paintings, all dedicated to Marge.
So another thing that the animators were like, oh, I gotta draw all this.
We gotta rip off other artists, too? Jeez.
Yeah. Well, the following morning, a well-rested Marge is firing on all cylinders, making unique breakfasts for each of the family member. The family toast to their matriarch when suddenly the sound of a helicopter is heard. The kids decide to check it out. Bart even suggests that we should check it out with caution. I just love that line. Like,
yeah.
Bart, like, with caution, of course. Homer is enjoying the sweetest taboo unguarded breakfast, so he just gathers all the breakfast to eat them. It's funny because the helicopter just like, there's a patch garden, and the helicopter just decidedly just lands on the garden. Just very funny. So Artie Ziff steps out and greets Marge. And Marge explains that she was a little drunk when she sent that email, but Artie assumes that she wants him back in his life since you can't spell party without Artie. I mean, if you misspell party or Artie. And Marge then tells him she's happily married.
Married? Was it consummated?
Pretty much, yeah.
What's going on?
Homer, don't talk with your mouth full. I've told you before, it's rude.
Oh ho, trouble in paradise.
Hey, Marge, it's that guy who couldn't get any off you.
How would you all like to take a ride with me?
You're the old flame.
Homer, Marge, I have a rather delicate proposition.
Spill it, moneybags.
Yes, I do have everything. But yet I often wonder what life with Marge would have been like.
It's like being married to my best friend, and he lets me feel his boobs.
Homie.
Homer, I will give you $1 million to let me spend a weekend alone with your wife.
$1 million? Wait a minute. How much sex would be involved? As if it's some.
Steve, you never let me touch your boobs. Is it because we're not married?
Yeah, and I figure we both have an impressive set of cans. So you can touch your own.
I just got to second base.
Oh, yeah. Well, that is kind of sweet to refer to your spouse as your best friend who's...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm surprised you didn't put that in your wedding vows.
I wanted to, but... Laura wouldn't let me.
Oh, you don't want to embarrass her in front of her family? That's nice of you.
Yeah, I try. I still embarrass her, but I try not to.
Not in the intentional way. Also referring to, like, the guy who couldn't get any off of you. It's just a very fun turn of phrase.
Really funny. So Artie assures Homer that it's not about sex. He just wants to show Marge what life would be like had she chosen him. Marge finds the proposal to be disgusting, so she grabs Homer, and they fly off in the Zip Corp helicopter. And as they leave, Artie tells them to think about it. And then the sea captain, Captain McAllister, says, "You'll win her yet, Artie," and then corrects himself, saying, "Artie," because he, you know, he's a pirate guy.
Yeah,
I love this. Just then, Bart, Lisa, and Maggie walk on the deck, and like, hey, where are our parents?
Oh, they forgot them. Good stuff. That evening, Homer interrupts his own loud story with a thought. If they had Artie's money, he could get that snoring surgery and at least two of the other surgeries he desperately needs. And, like, he does, like, a little twitch and another really good animation, too. Like, looks like detrimental, yeah. Marge is admittedly against the idea, saying She'll get used to the snoring, just like she got used to saying Courtney Cox Arquette. Do we have to explain that Courtney Cox was married to David Arquette? Do we have to explain who David Arquette is?
Maybe, yeah. You've seen Scream 6, right? Well, there used to be a Scream 1. And on the set of that, Courtney Cox met David Arquette, and they were married for a little while, and then in 2013 they broke up, and now she is with Mr. Snow Patrol Man, who is in the band Snow Patrol. I don't know if he actually is a Snow Patrol.
I was thinking Snow Patrol. I'm like, wait, she married Barney? I was thinking the Plow. That's the Plow King.
Well, that's what she calls the guy from Snow Patrol, so, but for a different reason.
I remember the when she changed her name to Courtney Cox, you know, during the Friends run when she got married. And remember the first season back, the joke, they all were like,
oh, yeah,
Matthew Perry Arquette and David Schwimmer Arquette and the rest. Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun.
So she says she enjoys some of the noises Homer makes in bed, and Homer offers a squeaking spring symphony, and they enjoy the act of marital lovemaking, you know, fucking. Marge is impressed by the digging she just got from Homer, but before Homer can comment, he is fast asleep, snoring yet again. And as the sun rises, Marge sits in bed, wide awake with bloodshot eyes, and Homer awakens and apologizes for preventing Marge from getting any sleep, and then begins to snore while he's awake. I just love the animation, too, of like Homer can instantly fall asleep and then like wakes up instantly just awake. No like morning grogginess. It's again really funny. This animation, they're putting into it when you brought that up. It's well done. Anyways, in this clip, Marge just realizes that Homer needs a surgery, so she calls Artie.
Okay, Ziff. You get it for the weekend, but no funny stuff. And by funny stuff, I mean hand-holding, goo-goo eyes, misdirected woo, which is pretty much any John Woo film.
Your wife's virtue shall remain as untouched as Bill Gates' weight room.
Remember, homie, I'm doing this for us. See you on Monday.
The misdirected woo, which is any John Woo film... Such a clever wordplay joke. Like, I don't, you know, John Woo is a great action director, and I think even they know that. It's just like you have this opportunity to take a phrase and turn it into a joke. Chef's kiss for that joke.
Yeah, really good. And I think it makes up for the bad Bill Gates joke.
Yeah, that Bill Gates joke is like, that's dumb. Like, it's easy to do a Bill Gates nerd joke.
Right. But yeah, the John Woo joke is just great.
That might be a joke of the day. Joke of the day.
Oh, man. There's some... Yeah.
All right. So as Marge flies off on Artie's helicopter, the MASH theme song, Suicide is Painless, plays. It's mimicking the series finale. And Homer forms the words, "Keep your clothes on," out of the Rocks, much like BJ Honeycutt wrote Goodbye in Rocks. Later that day, Radar comes in and says that Marge and Artie Ziff's helicopter was shot down over the Sea of Japan. It spun in. There were no survivors. And the credits fade to black, says executive producer Sam Simon, James L. Brooks, and Matt Groening. And that's the end of the episode. That's the end of Simpsons.
Wow.
So we're going to take a break, come back, and discuss this episode. All right, we'll be right back. No, of course not. I'm referencing the last episode of MASH. In the real world, Steve, of The Simpsons, Homer is there, and he visits Mo at the place called Moe's. He's buying a round of drinks and thanks to his forthcoming financial windfall. Later remarks that Homer sold his wife for $1 million, but Homer corrects his friend.
I didn't sell her. I just rented her to an old boyfriend.
Gee, $1 million. That's gonna buy him a lot of, swings in the old batting cage.
Looks like everyone's a winner. Marge gets a great new life.
And you get more sprawl space on the bed.
Wait, you really think Marge is gonna fall for this guy? Even after I bought her that hockey fight tape?
I'd dump your ass.
Me too.
Yeah, I can't get Artie out of my head. He's like a spy in the House of Moe.
Oh God, you're right. I gotta get her back before it's too late.
I like Mo with the Doors reference. Kind of a deep hole for a Doors song.
Yeah, it really is. The Doors, I don't think, are really talked much now in like pop culture. I don't know when the last time there was like a Doors reference, or I don't know. You still talk about the Stones and the Beatles. I know like the Beatles released a song recently, you know, I don't know. But you know what I'm saying? Like there's not a lot of Doors.
Yeah.
Just Robbie Krieger's still alive, right? Or no, he died. Ray Manzarek, I think he's still alive.
Mm-hmm.
Manzarek, Densmore dead, right? Densmore dead?
Yeah. My Densmore.
Yeah.
I feel like when people do reference the Doors now, they kind of malign them a little bit just because of Jim Morrison's lyrics being so whatever they were. I don't know. I think that they're a great band.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. A lot of fun to listen to, Steve.
Yeah. To me, they sound timeless. Speaking of timeless, how about The Simpsons? So,
yeah.
Artie rings the doorbell to his guest mansion, and he is greeted by Marge, who's wearing a fancy formal blue dress. Marge asks where Artie's taking her, and he says that they're going to take a trip through time. Marge eagerly asks, forwards? But Artie explains that no, they're going backwards to the sexy 70s. So as the tramp's Disco Inferno plays, Artie shows off the senior prom he has recreated. Several Springfield residents are there in their best 70s apparel. Herman in a baby blue wide-lapelled tuxedo, the Hibberts sporting afros, and Dr. Frink with a blue mohawk, a plastic suit, and platform shoes with goldfish in them. As Chief Wiggum dances in a leisure suit next to Willie, he comments that he can't believe Artie is paying each of them $1,000 to pretend it's the 70s. And Disco Stew comments that he, in the third person, he's working pro bono.
That joke didn't joke. There was the punchline. Like, it's usually Disco Stew supposed to rhyme. Like, Disco Stew is out to screw. I don't, you know what I mean? Like, but how do you,
yeah.
It's like, Disco Stew is working pro bono. Like, that, how's that a joke? Like, how's that a punchline, by the way? Like, we're praising the jokes in this episode, but for me, that one, like, that's not a joke.
I think he's just saying that he's doing it for free.
Because it's the 70s, like, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I do think Disco Stew does it for free.
Sure, like, at least do some sort of rhyme. Yeah, what would it be a better punch-up? If it was animated better, I think it'd be better. The animation was just so wrong. Those animators suck. They should redo everything.
I completely agree.
Now, like, it could have been like Disco Stew wasn't invited, but I'm here anyway. I don't know. It was probably like 3 a.m. They were trying to punch up the joke. Like, just keep it. No one cares. This episode's funny enough as it is. Like, fine.
Yeah.
I'm assuming Artie just hired the town of Springfield. Not all these people went to Springfield High School at that time. Like,
right.
So I'm bringing it up because Otto's in the crowd. And we have it.
Yeah, I saw that.
Is Otto, did he go to school in the 70s or is he just there as a hired gun? I think he's just there for, just to get paid.
Yeah, probably.
And was it me or did the band, like,
animatronic?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's weird that you saw that too. Like, was that maybe like a joke that was cut out? Like, they were like, oh no, that's actually just an animatronic band. Because even like the singing looks just like, it looked like we were watching Chuck E. Cheese, you know?
Yeah.
Performance.
I was wondering about that. Like, was that intentional or did they just kind of like screw up?
Again, those animators ruining this episode.
Yeah.
Well, Artie takes Marge by the hand and states that many years ago, he turned a groovy night into a complete bummer. But tonight, he'll give her the prom she always deserved. So the band begins to play, and Artie says they could dance all night since the possibly cursed band hasn't had a gig since the rap party of James at 16. Homer arrives at the Ziff estate looking for Marge, as like a Simon and Garfunkel-esque, like, Mrs. Robinson song plays, or, you know, like something from The Graduate. Mm-hmm. Homer kicks the statue of Artie, which is just fun. Just stops, kicks the statue, and then runs up the stairs where he finds his high school, where once again he has no date. Homer is then kicked out by a figure of authority, so he has to watch from the rooftop.
Simpson!
Hello, Dandelinger.
You're not on the guest list, Simpson. Orders of Prom King Ziff. And have you been drinking?
Just for 25 years.
Let's go, mister.
Oh.
You're very sweet, but no fake prom can make me forget my husband. I'm sorry.
Very well, Marge. I see you'll never feel about moi the way I feel about toi. But before the evening ends, may I request an innocent peck on the cheek?
Okay.
Oh, my God!
Oh no, if Marge marries Artie, I'll never be born.
I remember that joke of, if Marge marries Artie, I'll never be born. Such a great, again, just a great joke.
Good little Back to the Future reference.
There's just something so dumb and good about that joke. That's on the list for this week's episode, yeah.
So Marge pushes Artie away, slapping him and calling him a little nerd. She tells him that she knew this weekend was just an excuse for him to get in her mouth. She tells him to keep his money, and then she storms off. Artie's left in the makeshift gymnasium, surrounded by his hired partygoers. And then he tells them to dance, and then he shows them how by busting several moves while everyone kind of just awkwardly stares at him. And Wiggum, seeing how hard he's working, says that he'll sleep well tonight.
Well, give it up to the animators again, just having to animate all that dancing. Probably not fun. I also forgot to mention, it's nice to see Dongle Linger back. And I love that joke
clip
that we played was, have you been drinking only for 25 years?
There was a comment in my research that it doesn't make sense because Homer's 39, so if it was 25 years, that means he started drinking when he was 14. It's like, yeah, he drank when he was a kid. We all know this.
No, it was 17, though, because remember, and when I was 17, I had my very first beer.
Was a very good beer.
What was his
Brian McGee.
Name? There you go.
Brian McGee, yeah.
Well, Homer returns to Moe's and knocks back a duff and horrified of what he witnessed. He thinks he saw Marge kissing a far superior man, and Moe offers some comfort, saying that Artie is probably doing Marge as they speak, causing Homer to start crying. Thinking his life over, Homer offers a proposition to Lenny, asking if he'd like to leave town with him and never come back. And Lenny agrees, and they head off to leave Springfield forever. A car returns to the bathroom, wondering where if he missed anything. Lenny's also great in this episode.
Yeah.
Is this like the beginning of like Lenny just becoming like a good joke of a character? I don't know.
I think so. This is also one of the first episodes that feature the possible relationship of Lenny and Carl being more than just friends.
Right.
Which we'll get to in a bit. But you're talking about how this episode's full of good jokes, and this one coming up might be my favorite. So Marge arrives home in a Just Take Me Home cab company taxi. And Raphael Cabby says the bill is $912. And so Marge tells him to send the bill to Baron Von Kissalot. And so Raphael flips his cigarette and he says, no problemo. And then we cut to a castle deep in the forest of Germany where a butler hands a newly arrived bill to a man sitting by the fire. We then see Baron Von Kissalot, who's dressed in World War I gear, and he's got like the helmet with the spike, and he's got the biggest lips you've ever seen. And he wonders aloud in a German accent, who's the wise guy?
I agree. It's a great joke.
Yeah. So back in Springfield, Marge steps into her bedroom looking for Homer, but instead he finds a videotape marked to Marge.
Marge, if you're watching this, then it means I figured out how to work the camera. Last night, I crashed a certain fake prom. That's right, Artie Ziff's fake prom.
Oh, Homer was there?
I saw something terrible, and I can't even say it, so I'll have these two dolls do it for me. Kiss me, Artie. With pleasure. Homer's a big jerk.
But I can explain.
I'm leaving you, Marge. The next time you see my name will be in the hobo obituaries. Don't worry about the kids. I'll drop them off with Patty and Selma.
Patty and Selma? Screw that.
Just run the camera, you little... Goodbye, my darling.
It's nice to see Homer strangling his son again, you know?
Yeah,
so these new episodes. It. Yeah.
Like, gone woke. But also, if you see when he's implying the sexual relationship between Artie and Marge, Artie is played by Funzo, the doll from The Grift of the Magi from season 11, which we talked about way back in December of 2019. So,
but it's also
4 years ago.
Yeah, it's also fun to think of that scene because Bart is there videotaping it.
I didn't think about that. That is funny.
Okay, I think that's, I don't know, 10 years old, do we know that wee-wees go into hoo-hoos?
I think you know by then.
Okay. Do you know at 10? Would you know how to do the physical act of intercourse?
I mean,
watch yourself, Steve.
Maybe
what you say.
Okay. Yeah. I assume that it's like you know, like with yourself, and it just kind of comes naturally. Maybe, I don't know. I think I knew though. I had seen videos, right. Or yeah. Did you know how to have sex with a 10-year-old?
Hey, Steve, Homer takes a bus with Lenny to West Springfield. He comments that everything reminds him of Marge, and then we look out the window and see several Marge-shaped cacti. Is it cactuses or cacti?
I know that it's supposed to be cacti, but I think I heard like a word person, an etymologist, say it's actually cactuses. Like,
right. And
people are so eager to be sound fancy that they do it wrong.
Yeah.
Same with octopuses.
Yeah, they're just called pusses, right?
Mm-hmm. I love eating a puss.
Yeah, I love going to a sushi place with all the puss. I love my puss fried.
Oh, yeah.
Fried puss. Anyway, Lenny can relate to Homer seeing Marge everywhere because he feels the same way about Carl, because they passed Mount Carlmore, which Lenny carved one wonderful summer, and Homer asks what Carl thinks about the mountain with his face carved into it, but Lenny states it's never discussed it. Were fans mad about that joke, or there was something about like Mount Carmel that I don't know? Did people not like that for some reason, or am I thinking of a Tapped Out thing?
I definitely remember it. I definitely remember it from Tapped Out. Like, I don't know why, but for some reason, Mount Carmel seems like a big deal in Tapped Out, even though it probably was just a thing.
Like, it was too recent for us. Like, why would they add this? This isn't cool.
Yeah, because it was all the way from 2002.
We only wanted seasons 1 through 8 referenced on Tapped Out.
Yeah. Oh, Tapped Out. Ho, I don't miss thee. So, Lenny and Homer end their ride on the succubus line and go to an oil rig looking for roughnecks. They're offering dangerous work and a free burial. Lenny and Homer pass by workers with eye patches, hooks for hands, a blind man missing both of his legs, a man with a scar eating a sandwich with hook hands who also has hook feet, and a man who declines a sandwich because he has a hook for a head. It's so dumb. And I
love it.
They approach a gruff one-armed man who's smoking, and they say that they're eager to work. Meanwhile, Marge and the kids try and track down Homer.
Do you have any jobs for a man who wants to die? Something indoorsy.
Close to a bathroom?
I'll put you on rig 13 as soon as they burn off the corpses.
This job will be perfect. I'm gonna leave this world the way I entered it. Dirty, screaming, and torn away from the woman I love.
Oh, quick and pointless. That's the death for me.
Thank you. You've been very helpful. Dad just got a library card in West Springfield. He checked out 10 books on oil rigging and a book called Dying for Dummies.
He must have taken a job in the West Springfield oil patch. That's practically a death sentence.
What happened now? Homer bowled a 300 game?
Grandpa, that happened a year and a half ago. We have to go save Homer.
But West Springfield's 3 times the size of Texas. We'll never find him there.
Unless... I really appreciate you helping me find Homer.
Think nothing of it, Marge. I hope we can always be friends.
Of course.
With privileges?
I really love the visual when they're looking at the map of Springfield, and it's clearly the outline of Texas. So, like, giving fans, like, wait, Springfield's in Texas? But then when Lisa says, what's Springfield? It's like 2 times the size of Texas. Or
yeah.
3 times the size of Texas. Like, making, like, Springfield literally Springfield, America, because, you know, the size of Texas.
Right. Also, their detective work cracks me up. Like, Homer got a library card from West Texas. So their first thought was called library. Or, yeah. And then they, like, discover that he checked out all these books on oil rigging and Dying for Dummies. Like, so good.
Not even to mention, too, like, talking about how, in the beginning of the clip, of how Homer wants to die, and then he's like, oh, yeah, pointless or, you know, pointless death for me or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And then Grandpa just coming in with the What, Homer? Like, the animation of Grandpa, too, like, he's, like, all hunched over with a cane. Like, what, mm-hmm. Homer, bowling a perfect 300? Oh, whatever. He just, like, walks away. Like, just, that whole clip was great, you know? Like I said, when he references the perfect 300, that was from season 11, episode 6. Hello, Gutter, Hello, Fodder, which we reviewed back in July of 2021, I think. Yeah, episode 130. I feel like we just reviewed that, but yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's a while ago.
You know, if you're talking to me about a perfect 300, it's that movie with Gerard Butler.
Sure.
Yeah. So Artie hornily laps up his tongue while looking up and down Marge's body until he gets to her face, which is sternly denying his advances. Which is really gross. Like, just him just like going, nah, 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 like around her crotch. She asks if that works on anyone, and Artie admits that it hasn't. But when it does, hello. But back on Rig 13, Homer and Lenny use all of their might to turn a wheel, capping the oil well. Lenny suggests they raise their goggles in triumph, and they do so. And then a sunbeam shines through the goggles, singeing Homer's hair. The beams then set an ant on fire, and so the ant screams and then runs down to its anthill. And then dozens of ants, all on fire, emerge from the anthill and run to a puddle of oil. They all breathe a sigh of relief, believing that the fire's out. But then a huge flame bursts out, and Homer and Lenny are stuck, surrounded by, much like Johnny Cash, a ring of fire. Homer is scared, saying that this is how Faithless Joe lost his legs. I love the ant joke, and also how Faithless Joe lost his legs. Just quality stuff.
And the sound the ants make, like, clearly not ants.
Yeah.
They just, like, yeah. Great bit of animation. Lenny says that it looks like they're goners, and then Notley Charlie says, oh, well, circle of life. Just then, a helicopter flies overhead. It's Marge and Artie. And Marge lets down a rope ladder, and Lenny hops on, but Homer is reluctant.
Climb up! Ain't you coming, Homer?
Why, so I can watch my wife spend the rest of her life in the arms of another man? I don't think so. Good day!
But Homer!
We said good day!
Listen to me, Homer, you've won! You own Marge's heart, and that's something I could never buy!
Woohoo!
There's nothing on that helicopter for me.
Don't be so sure.
Carl Carlson?
Artie, thanks for saving my life. Now, I believe there's a little matter of the $1 million.
We can't take his money.
Oh, I can't take his money. I can't print my own money. I have to work for money. Why don't I just lie down and die?
Hear, hear, Homer.
Is this the first time we know Carl's last name is Carl Carlson?
No. I think it's been referenced earlier, but it is one of the earlier times. I will say that, well, I don't think it was out of date at this time. I think that I said good day, sir, should go to joke jail.
Give me an example of other things saying that.
Mostly, like, Christian kids who...
You hanging out with a lot of Christian kids?
Not anymore. Not since the lawsuits. No, I just feel like it is a thing that a lot of people say, like... I don't know. I think it's a little played out at this point.
All right. I'll go with that, Steve. So, Artie tells Homer that he should have learned something from all this. He's rich, rich, rich! And after a little assistance from an employee, Artie hops into his chopper and flies off, and the sunset declaring, I'm Artie Ziff. That night in bed, Homer tells Marge that Artie saved his life. Marge says that he also saved their marriage with his latest invention. It's the snore converter. And Homer puts on the sleepy mask, gets a kiss from Marge, and falls fast asleep. He begins to snore, but because this device is new, Marge flips on the device, and the pleasant sounds of the Eurythmics begin to play.
He's a loser, Marge. Dump him. I traveled the world in the seven seas. I am watching you through a camera.
I like how you were at the beginning, the Chekhov's phaser,
mm-hmm.
His first invention with, you know, the dial-up having also playing music, and then this is coming mm-hmm. back in. Yeah. And were sleep apnea machines like a thing back in early 2000s? Like, I've only really heard about them recently within the last like maybe 15 years.
Yeah, I don't think they had the prevalence that they do now. So I think it was kind of novel, and The Simpsons kind of did it first.
I was thinking, was it a Sopranos thing where like someone had to use a sleep apnea machine? Or what TV show was it? There was a TV show that had that featured it. I just want to think it was Sopranos for some reason.
I could see that.
And was it Sopranos? I don't remember. It doesn't matter.
I was just going to say, it's interesting that so many inventions in The Simpsons are just translating or changing sounds, like Unky Herb's baby machine.
Yeah.
It's just taking sounds. Like, it's just funny how, like, if you're a guest star and you make an invention, you've got to change sounds.
I just recently watched that episode. It was on TV. And that's still, like, my dream is to... I want them to do an episode with Unky Herb again. Get Danny DeVito. Danny DeVito is like still hot. Like people love Danny DeVito.
Oh yeah.
Why haven't you done an episode? I don't know what's stopping them. I mean, maybe Danny doesn't want. Yeah, I don't think that's it. It's just, I need Unky Herb back, Steve. I need him back.
I know. Gotta have Unky Herb.
Well, Steve, we did it. We watched the episode. We probably have some things to say about it.
I think so.
If you're listening to this podcast, you probably can assume it's good things, I guess. Maybe. But maybe not. I don't know. Steve, I think we should just take a break and come back and discuss. How about that?
Sounds great.
We'll be right back.
Hey, computer geek, you will be connected in no time.
And we're back. All right, Steve, let's wrap up this week's episode, Half Decent Proposal. We'll talk about some of the things that made us laugh, some maybe scenes that didn't work. We'll find out. Then, give a nice little review, find out what we're watching next week. But before we do that, Steve, we are in the midst of December when we recorded this episode, and this is definitely the gift-giving season. Presents are all on our minds, and this episode is no exception. God, this episode is full of lots of gift-giving ideas. You know, I could get you a nice set of Chewbacca pajamas or a Jar Jar Binks doll. I could pay for your snoring operation. I really want to get you a shirt that says sexy aunt, you know? But I thought, Steve likes to read, and I thought I'd get you a subscription to a little newspaper called the Hobo Obituaries that Homer mentions. He said, read about my death in the Hobo Obituaries. So, Steve, you get a 24-month subscription to the Hobo Obituaries.
Wow, that's great. I love it. I will read it every day and learn up on my dead hobos. And, you know, it's funny because I also know that you love to read. So I got you 10 books on oil rigging and a copy of Death for Dummies.
I'll just put those right over here in my bookcase. They look great next to my books.
Of course.
All right. Steve. We like to make the yuck yucks, but what from this episode made you yuck yuck? I mean, you'll laugh, not get grossed out.
There's a lot of funny in this episode. The little things like Bart eating the plant, the way that Marge kind of just zonked out in the car and just jumped out and started rolling and then fell asleep. But really the tail end of the episode had like so many laughs. I love it when Homer and Lenny arrive at the oil rig. And there's all these people with hooks for body parts. Just the impracticality of having a hook for a foot or a hook for a head is very funny. The fire ants, or the ants on fire, really funny. I think that there's a lot of like silly jokes in here that are really good. I really like the Sex and the City bit. The broker? No, just hurt her. So yeah, those are just some of my funny things. But what do you think?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. It was, like I mentioned, how it's just like, they're hitting it out of the ballpark. Everyone's getting on base. It keeps going, like, joke after joke. Now, I think this is, like, I'm trying to remember, like, back in 2002, watching this episode live, which I'm sure I did, that I was like, man, is this too jokey? Is it too unrealistic? Especially with the end with, like, all those people with losing the limbs and, like, the hook. I'm like, this isn't real. Mm-hmm. This is dumb. And they're too self-referential. There's the Baron von Kissel-Lot, you know, like,
Oh, I forgot this, about him.
Yeah, and like the My Aunt Caramore. I don't know. This isn't the way that Simpsons used to be back in like season 7. I wish Oakley and Weinstein were back and taking it over. This is my mentality back then, right? But looking at it now, We're also coming off of like an episode of Marge and Homer from the new season with I.E. Bonnie romance, where like their marriage is on the fritz again, and how we just felt like that was too meh. And like this one is, you know, Homer still feels inadequate, which is, you know, a very, you know, common theme throughout the Simpsons episodes. But I don't think there was one joke in here that was like, meh. I mean, I mentioned like the Disco Stew joke was probably my biggest complaint. I understand the reference because it's at Disco the 70s. But like, you know, I feel like you had to have Disco Stew there just dressed normally. There could have been some work around that. But like the animation, like you mentioned how the animation, how the animators hated animating this episode. But just well done. Like, Dr. Hibbert and Nick going through and bashing mailboxes. Homer showing how people have sex with dolls in front of Bart. Sounds like I'm reviewing the episode. That's my review. What's your review, Steve?
It's funny because the plot of Artie trying to get Marge back and doing a parody of Indecent Proposal, which had been out like 8 years after this episode came out, doesn't work. It's a dumb plot, and I don't particularly like it. However, the episode is so funny, and there's so many silly jokes and such great detail that I kind of love this episode because it does have so much good humor, like an ice cream truck, that I found myself enjoying the whole episode. And so I think it's probably a positive.
There's so much visual gags that I loved about this episode. You know, like I'm just scrolling through right now, just looking at, and when I stop on something, like how funny that is. Like the fact that the helicopter lands on the flower bed twice, you know, they leave the kids on the yacht. Homer's snoring with his eyes, and just how Lenny and Carl, like weird romance that they have that we're learning about, you know?
Yeah, even this... Mo being like, don't feel bad, Homer. If you think about it, she's probably having sex with them right now. Like,
yeah, if I gave this a ranking, look, Jay Sherman, you know, played by John Lovitz, was on the show, The Critic. Steve, is it hard to believe that there's only 33 episodes of The Critic? That's 33.
That is hard to believe.
We need more.
Yeah.
But if I ranked this out of 33, I'm going to give this episode, let's just say 30. Great episode. How about you?
Yeah, I agree. It is a great episode. And I think that all the performances are great. It's great to see John Lovitz again. And if I had to give this a rating, you mentioned the relationship between Phil Hartman and John Lovitz. Phil Hartman was on a great show with Dave Foley called News Radio. And unfortunately, after he passed away from, you know, the brutal murder that his wife did because of Andy Dick, John Lovitz actually kind of took his place despite being a regular guest star on the show. John Lovitz was in 23 episodes of News Radio. So out of 23... I'm going to give this a solid 21 out of 23.
Yeah, I'm happy that this was fun coming in with this episode. Definitely a rewatch.
Mm-hmm.
And let's not forget the best line. If Marge and Artie get married, I'll never be born. Steve, go eat some flowers. I know it's not from this episode, but Bart eats flowers. I love that slight sight gag. Okay, well, Steve, we were on last week for a new episode and off this week for an old episode, but Steve, we're back again with a new episode this coming week.
Boy.
So it's going to be season 35, episode 9. What do you think the title of the episode is?
Well, we're getting closer to Christmas, but I don't know if I actually do a Christmas episode just yet. So if I had to guess a title, I would say... It's beginning to look a lot like Frankmas.
That's a pretty good title. I might get see where that goes, but of course, you're wrong. Because if you're right, this podcast would cease to exist, and we can't have that happening, right? It is a play on words, or of a title that you might be familiar with. It's called Murder, She Boat.
Oh.
Murder, She Boat. Season 35, episode 9. So, based on that title, Steve, what do you think the... plot summary would be?
Marge and Homer go on a cruise, and there they meet a sweet elderly old lady who's actually a murderer, played by Angela Lansbury, if she's still alive.
No, she died a while ago.
Okay, well then she won't play it, but it'll be played by Angela Kinsey of The Office. just because their names are kind of similar.
And then we could finally have her on the podcast and talk about the office ladies.
That's right. Meanwhile, Bart puts Lisa Stapler in Jell-O.
Yeah, that's right. Now, Steve, it's actually Lisa must solve a closed boat mystery when comic book guy's million-dollar action figure is, quote-unquote, murdered on a pop culture cruise. Do you think it's that Jar Jar Binks action figure he was holding in this episode? It gets murdered?
Lisa gonna die.
Steve, there's no synopsis of what the B story is, so maybe it's just all A. I think a great writer, Brody Gupta, wrote this episode, and like her episode, so looking forward to Murder, She Boat.
Indeed, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Well, you know what else is a lot of fun, Steve?
What's that?
By contacting us on social medias. You got Instagram, YouTube, you know, it's at 138Simpsons, or you can email us at 138Simpsons@gmail.com.
And hey, if you're so kind, you can go to your favorite podcasting app, leave us 5 stars or the equivalent, but you don't need to write a real review. Just tell us the surgery that you so desperately need. And hey, while you're there, just click on that microphone and leave us a voicemail, too. You can tell us anything you'd like. You can ask us a question, do an impression, or tell us your favorite John Lovitz role.
It's still the gift-giving season. You can go to tpublic.com/user/annoyedgruntboys for some Annoyed Grunt Boy swag.
Yeah. Thank you so much for listening.
Hey, don't forget to tell a friend, tell an enemy, tell Santa Claus. Yes, go see Santa right now. The man in the big red suit at your local mall. What's a mall? I'm not sure. But tell him, or she, or they, or whatever Santa's pronouns are now, that you want the Annoyed Grunt Boys for Christmas.
That's right.
All right, for this week, I've been Annoyed Grunt Boy Craig.
And I've been Annoyed Grunt Boy Steve.
And remember, if I'm not having sex by the end of this goat cheese quesadilla, I'm gonna scream.
Quick and pointless. That's the death for me.
Oh no! If Marge marries Artie, I'll never be born.